A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
We go to Athens for the latest on your Georgia Bulldogs. This is Bulldog Roundtable, exclusively on The Fan. Live from the Georgia's own Credit Union Studios at the Buttsmere Building in Athens.
25-20, far sideline, 15-10-5, get in there, touchdown!
This morning, The Fan staff brings you the latest on the Dogs.
As the station in Atlanta that's live in Athens all year long.
Yes, indeed! That was too easy!
Bulldog Roundtable is proudly presented by Georgia's Own Credit Union. Find out how you can become one of Georgia's Own at georgiasown.org.
And that's going to be the ballgame. Georgia will win this ballgame.
Now, live from the Georgia's Own Credit Union studios in the Buttsmere Building in Athens, it's Chuck Dowdle on the Bulldog Roundtable.
Oh, and welcome to all of you to the palatial Georgia's Own Credit Union Studios right here in the Classic City. Coming to you live today, the Bulldog Roundtable. And before we dive into today's show, first off, let's give a big congratulations to Savir Wheeler. On Tuesday night against LSU, as the Dogs beat the Tigers 91-78, the little fella, as his teammates call him, put up the first triple-double in the 116-year history of University of Georgia basketball. So congratulations to Savir Wheeler for that. And then also a quick note, congratulations to Scott Strickland's baseball team, a 6-2 winner over Georgia State yesterday. They've now won four in a row, and looking forward to a four-game series this weekend against Gardner-Webb at Foley Field, weather permitting on Friday. The weekend looks good. Tomorrow may be a little bit sketchy, but wanted to get those little items of business out of the way, and then turn our attention to that NFL draft coming up in April, and a number of former Bulldogs obviously with their hearts set on stepping to that next level, and very interested to see where they would go. We've been kind of targeting some of these mock drafts that you see around, and to where they have former Bulldogs slated. And we welcome in our first guest this morning, Alex Gilstrap. He is a contributor to the NFL Draft Bible and also to SI Now. And Alex, welcome, and thanks for being with us this morning. I got to tell you, so far you're our favorite guest. You've got three, or I guess we could say even four, former Georgia Bulldogs going in the first round, starting with Justin Fields, who was a former Dog. He ended up at Ohio State, but did play some here, going to the New York Jets with a second pick.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for having me on. And, yeah, I'm usually, you know, in years past, I've been pretty low on the Georgia guys, but this year I see a lot of talent. Whether you want to claim Justin Fields or not, I know that's up in the air for a lot of Georgia fans, but having him go number two, I think he is the second best quarterback prospect in this year's class behind Trevor Lawrence. Although, you know, a lot of insiders are saying Zach Wilson is where New York is leaning. That's what, you know, reports are coming out. But for me, Justin Fields is the second quarterback, and, you know, there's a lot of talented players coming out of Athens this year.
You know, it's really funny, Alex. I don't care which mock draft you look at, and they are all over the board on all sorts of different things, but they're all unanimous across that top pick.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Trevor Lawrence by far. I think this, you throw, you know, the word generational is thrown around so much, especially in NFL draft circles, but I think you truly have one with Trevor Lawrence. We've seen it since his freshman year, you know, leading that Clemson team to the national championship. And outside of a couple hiccups in 2019 to start the year, I mean, he's been very dominant and very consistent throughout his collegiate career. I think he's a no-brainer to go down to Jacksonville and take over that franchise.
Well, let's drop down to another former Dog, and that is with a 16th pick going to the Arizona Cardinals. You have Eric Stokes at cornerback, and I got to tell you something. That young man, something that wasn't mentioned in the article, but something that I always that intrigued me about him. You know, he was an offensive player coming out of high school. He converted to defense, and not only is he really keen on picking off balls and coming up with interceptions, but quite often he returns them for, there are a lot of pick sixes in that guy's repertoire.
Oh, yeah. So for me, I think I'm higher than most on Eric Stokes. And for me, it's the athleticism. He's not the biggest corner in the world in this draft class, you know, at about 5'11", 185 pounds. But his speed is stupid for the NFL level. I don't think there's too many NFL wide receivers that are going to outpace him, you know, on streak routes, on go routes. And, you know, he was able to turn the ball over in 2020 more so than he was in years prior, which is something that we were looking for going into 2020. And he proved that he can turn the football over, which is, you know, such an important trait, you know, transitioning to the NFL level and is getting the offense back on the field. So Eric Stokes is just somebody that, you know, I've continued to get higher on, and he proved this year that he can turn the ball over with consistency. And like you said, the athleticism translates after the interception, where he was able to return, you know, a couple for a touchdown and get some good returns after the interception as well.
Fair to say that there's a premium on defensive backs and particularly athletic corners in this year's draft?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, we saw in the NFC Championship game, you know, a team that I think is going to be in the cornerback market, the Green Bay Packers. They just could not stop the passing game from Tom Brady and Tampa Bay. It's just such an important position. The two most important positions to me on the defensive side of the football is corner, the ones that defend the pass, and the pass rushers, which I know we're going to talk about one of those from Georgia as well here in a minute, I'm sure. But those are the two, you know, most highly coveted positions to disrupt the passing game, which is so, you know, prevalent in the NFL today.
Well, you mentioned the Green Bay Packers. Let's jump down to them at 29, and you've got them taking Tyson Campbell, who has had a terrific career at Georgia.
Yeah, Tyson Campbell, you know, coming into the year, I think a lot of the draft media was a lot higher on him because from a size, length, athleticism standpoint, he had everything you want at the next level. I mean, he's looking at about 6'1", 6'2", 200 pounds and super lengthy, plays well in press coverage and can, you know, disrupt the timing of route concepts on the outside. And pair that with, you know, legitimate athleticism, the former five stars, you know, was coming into the year as a top guy, and kind of a disappointing year for some people, but I think a lot of it was just he played against really good talent. You know, he was asked to cover Devontae Smith, who I don't think there's a cornerback in the country that shut him down this year, as he had one of the more historic seasons that we've seen in recent history. But Tyson Campbell, I think he has all the tools, all the traits you want to develop. I don't know if he's going to be a, you know, locked and loaded day one starter that's going to play really well right away, but from, you know, a speed, athleticism, change of direction, and then, of course, like I said, that size and length, I think you have everything you need to build a Pro Bowl-level corner at some point down the road.
Yeah, you point out, and rightfully so, that his career was a little up and down. I mean, he played well for the Dogs, but, you know, there were some times that he got caught looking, and, you know, that'll happen. You know, you got to have a short memory if you're going to play that position. But there's no question when you see that young man up close and personal, I mean, he passes the eyeball test.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, he came in on campus that way. You know, as the highly coveted recruit he was, you know, there were high expectations for him. And for the most part, you know, from a skill set standpoint, he definitely lived up to that. It was just, like you said, a little bit of a rocky road. I know there were some things off the field out of his control that caused him to miss some time earlier on in his collegiate career. But Tyson Campbell, like I said, from an NFL projection standpoint, is someone that 3 to 4 years down the road, if I have a defensive back coach that I'm confident in the development of young guys, that's someone I want on my roster because he has everything you need.
Talking with Alex Gilstrap of the NFL Draft Bible and SI Now. And, Alex, then let's move back to that pass rusher you were talking about. And I think everybody has him going in the first round. A couple of these mock drafts, including yours, have him going number 22 to the Tennessee Titans. And that, of course, Azeez Ojulari.
Yeah, Azeez Ojulari, he really cemented himself in the first round with that Cincinnati game and the bowl game, where he just completely dominated, including that safety to end it on Desmond Ridder, the quarterback out of Cincinnati. But, no, Azeez Ojulari, you know, the 3-4 outside linebacker mold fits what Tennessee has, and I think that's why you see him mocked to Tennessee so often. I think Baltimore Ravens is another landing spot where, from a scheme standpoint, suits him best. I'm a really big Ojulari fan, and, of course, playing that pass-rushing role, I think, you know, that's so important at the next level. He gets kind of billed as this slim pass rusher that some people worry about, but don't mistake that size for a lack of power. There's a play that stood out in his tape in the Alabama game this year where I don't know how much we know about Deonte Brown, the guard from Alabama, but 365 pounds. I mean, this dude's a hoss, you know, big guy. Came on a pull as Azeez Ojulari was crashing down on the trap concept run play, and he stood his ground. He didn't move an inch, and this Deonte Brown was coming full force at him, had 100 pounds on him, 100-plus pounds on him, and he didn't move. Azeez Ojulari packed a punch. He's plenty strong. He's a dense build, and with that length, his flexibility, athleticism to rush the passer from many different angles on the outside. I mean, this guy is a versatile weapon that the NFL is going to be really high on, I believe.
Well, let me tell you something else about it. There are a couple other things, too, that whichever NFL team lands that young man is going to be very happy about, and that is his work ethic and his leadership abilities. Both are just off the charts. He is a terrific get for somebody there in the first round, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think he checks all the boxes, like you said, from a leadership standpoint all the way down to what you see on film. He checks every box. And I won't be surprised if 3 or 4 years down the road we look back on this draft class and he's looked at as the best defensive player overall in this draft.
Wow. Alex, certainly appreciate your time this morning. Alex Gilstrap with the NFL Draft Bible and SI Now with his mock draft. And again, four former Dogs, if you count Justin Fields, and we do as a former Bulldog, going in that first round. That's great to hear. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to turn our attention to one of those teams that's on Georgia's football schedule this coming fall. We're kind of taking a look, kind of get a little bit of a preview, and we're going to check in with those Hogs up in Fayetteville, Arkansas. That's next.
Dialed into the Dogs all year long.
This is Bulldog Roundtable on the Fan. This is Bulldog Roundtable with Chuck Dowdle, live from the Georgia's Own Credit Union Studios in the Butzmir Center in Athens, on the official sports talk station of the Georgia Bulldogs, the Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM.
Well, last year, of course, COVID hit and schedules were bounced around, and suddenly on the Bulldog schedule appeared the Arkansas Razorbacks, and we opened the season in Arkansas, in Fayetteville, and had to struggle with a very talented football team, I think, that surprised a lot of people last year with former Dog coach and now the head coach of Arkansas, Sam Pittman. And joining us now is Andrew Hutchinson. He covers Arkansas on hogbeat.com. And, Andrew, I've just got to assume that Hog fans are absolutely thrilled with Sam Pittman.
Oh, absolutely. I think they were probably more optimistic than the national perception whenever Arkansas went out and hired an offensive line coach who had never been a head coach or even a coordinator, as you would expect from a fan base. But I don't think anybody, you know, realistically expected Arkansas to be as good as they were in 2020. I mean, especially given all of the obstacles, you know, Arkansas didn't get any spring practice. You know, they had a new offensive and defensive coordinator, so that was going to be huge to implement their systems. Didn't get that opportunity. Then you get the weird all SEC schedule, so you don't get to really ease into the schedule. You have to jump right into it against Georgia. You also add, they add the two extra games, and Arkansas, lo and behold, gets Georgia and Florida from the East. So no breaks there. I mean, I predicted them to go 2-8 before the season, and I felt
boy, that was a swing and a miss.
I felt really, I thought that I was worried that was too optimistic. I mean, wow. I really thought that it was going to be a challenge because they were so bad the last 2 years. I know, you know, Georgia fans might not have watched it, you know, because it's out in the West and they didn't have them on the schedule. But Arkansas was atrocious under Chad Morris. Back-to-back 2-10 seasons, they were getting blown out by Western Kentucky and North Texas. It was not good in Fayetteville. So for Sam Pittman, you know, they went 3-7, which doesn't look great. But then you throw in the fact that three of those losses were by a total of 7 points.
Yeah, and you kind of got the officials kind of got you at Auburn.
Yeah,
that should have been a win. That should have been an Arkansas win.
It definitely should have. And, like, the bad call at the end was one thing, but also Arkansas had a botched extra point hold early in the game, and so then they had to go for two on a couple other touchdowns, and so that cost them 3 points right there. So, I mean, they honestly, it shouldn't have come down to the referee's decision in that game. But, you know, they lost that game by, I want to say, 2 points. And, you know, LSU, Arkansas lost by one or two, and I think they lost by three. They had a potential game-tying field goal block in the closing seconds. They took the lead at Missouri with the miraculous touchdown and two-point conversion with less than a minute left at Missouri, only to let Missouri go down the field and get in field goal range and kick a field goal as time expired. So really, really close to being 6-4 against an all-SEC schedule when literally no one had any type of expectations for
it. Well, let me talk with Andrew Hutchinson. He covers Arkansas on hogbeat.com. And, Andrew, how did two quick questions, and because we don't have a lot of time, but first off, how did Sam get it turned around that quickly? And then secondly, how did recruiting go?
So everyone talks about culture when a new coach comes in, but, you know, I really think that it was a true buy-in from the team whenever Sam Pittman came in, because the team, there was always there, you didn't ever get a good vibe from the team whenever Chad Morris was the coach. You always kind of thought that there was some tension, you know, some stuff going on in the locker room, and it, you know, resulted in bad play on the field. With Sam Pittman, you get this feeling that the players truly love him because they feel like he loves them. And I think it's really as simple as that. You know, he was able to get all of the potential out of them. I mean, because this is a roster that still is nowhere close to the Georgias, the Floridas, the Alabamas, the LSUs of the world, because it's just hard to recruit. And so it was truly just a matter of buy-in and, you know, playing hard for the coach because they truly loved them. And then as far as recruiting, they did okay, I would say. You know, they brought in, I think, a couple of four-star recruits, a couple of receivers that are good. You know, they also landed a quarterback that they think, Lucas Coley, who could be a guy that helps them down the line. He's one of those true dual-threat quarterbacks. Don't know if he's going to play much as a true freshman because they got a couple other guys that are going to be going through a quarterback battle this spring in KJ Jefferson, who played really well in a spot start when Felipe Franks got hurt at Missouri. And then also Malik Hornsby, who was a four-star recruit, dual threat guy, highly touted. I think those guys are going to get most of the reps. But I think they landed some good players, a couple of running backs that I think might be able to help them right away. Good speed out of Oklahoma, A.J. Green. They landed Rocket Sanders, which is, you know, anytime your name's Rocket and you're a skill position, that's a good
thing.
So they've got some guys that could help them in this recruiting class. I think this 2022 class that they're working on right now has the potential to be even better. They've already got a four-star running back there out of Georgia, and also are targeting some other guys, some other four-star recruits that have Arkansas high on their list. So it could be a pretty good class for Arkansas, especially if they go and take another step on the field.
Wow. Well, we certainly look forward to seeing the Hogs at Sanford Stadium this fall, but appreciate your time this morning, too. Andrew Hutchinson, covering Arkansas on hogbeat.com, and we'll check in with our old buddy Sam Pittman when they show up in the fall. We look forward to that. We're going to take a break. We come back, we're going to turn our attention to basketball. The Georgia Bulldogs hosting South Carolina on Saturday, 1 o'clock at Stegman. That'll be next here on the Bulldog Roundtable.
The Atlanta station broadcasting live from Athens all year long.
This is Bulldog Roundtable on The Fan.
Hi, this is Vince Dooley, and you're listening to the Georgia Bulldog Roundtable on the official sports talk station of the Georgia Bulldogs, 680 The Fan. Now on FM at 93.7, Go Dogs!
Hey, welcome back to the Bulldog Roundtable, and our next guest, a gentleman who's been with us before and awfully glad to have him back, spent more than a decade playing and working in the NBA, and now one of the newest members of Coach Tom Crean's staff here at the University of Georgia, and what a job he is doing. Player development is the title of his position, but Michael Curry, it's awfully good to have you back, and Coach, I was just sitting here looking back at the schedule, and if you go back to January 16th, from that point, Georgia in its last 12 games in the conference has gone 7-5. And during that same period, Kentucky, as an example, has gone 3-6.
We feel really good. I think if you go back to the beginning with the guys, this is, you know, kind of what Coach Crean has talked to them about as far as continuing to grow throughout the season. You know, when you look at our team, our, you know, two young guys for that are our leaders are Tamani and Severe, and they both are sophomores. And so they were stepping into big roles. And so as we continue to grow as a team, as they get to experience, you know, being in those leadership roles, we felt that the team stayed together and continued to work hard every day, which they have, that we will be playing our best basketball toward the latter part of the season. And the guys have stayed true to that.
It looks like that it's coming to fruition, too. And one of the guys I wanted to talk to you about, and I know, you know, we're coming off that first ever in the history of the school of a triple-double with Savir, and which was just great to see and witness firsthand. But I've got to ask you about Tumani Kamara. As I watch that young man, the more I see of him, the better. He's good with both hands. He's so fluid in his movements. His defense has really improved. He challenges shots on a continuing basis and blocks a lot of them.
Oh, he's been great. You know, I think we've been a little bit more aggressive defensively, which have caused and allowed him to, you know, maybe do some trapping and rotating. He's always been one of our leaders when it came to deflections. And so the deflections are up for the team. They're up for him and his ability to block shots. You know, he's not a guy that blocks shots body to body. He's a weak side shot blocker. And so his movement and activity when guys can't have their bodies on him really helps him. And he's protected the paint. He's initiated the offense. He's actually, you know, been really good, and once again, he's one of the ones that is growing into the role of being, you know, one of the lead guys that you're depending on both offensively and defensively.
Coach, when you see Georgia play, what in your mind makes the biggest difference on any given night, in whether it's a good night or an off night for Georgia?
Well, I think one of the strengths of our team, and it takes time with what Coach Crean does. For example, we just played a game in which we played LSU. And we ran some of the same sets against LSU back at the beginning of conference play. And we ran those same sets, but guys were in totally different positions this time around. He does a great job of moving the guys around. You can see as the offense is initiated, we may run the same play, and Tamani is at the five, and the next time he's at the one. He even puts Severe at the five out of four and the two. And so he moves guys around. So what ends up happening is guys are having to defend different actions. And so all of a sudden, instead of a five-man setting the back pick on an action in which the five-man is used to helping out, Severe is setting the back pick, and all of a sudden you look up and a guy's getting a backdoor layup. It's because the point guard is not used to being in that position of protecting a back pick. So that's one of the things I've really learned and appreciated from afar with Coach Crean, how he does that. The thing about it takes time for guys to grow into understanding it. And I think that's another reason why we're playing our best basketball now is some of it just it takes time. And as you have retention with your roster, they get to be even better as you move forward. So, you know, we've been excited about where we're at. The guys are learning more and more about what Coach Crean needs from them on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, it's been fun to watch their growth.
Talking with Coach Michael Curry from the University of Georgia, member of Coach Tom Crean's coaching staff here with this basketball team, which is really playing well down the stretch of this SEC season. And, Coach, another thing, it seems that when we get those outside shots to fall, it opens up an awful lot for us. And that seems to happen when we do a better job playing defense.
Yeah, one of the things about when we're playing really good defensively, we get out and we can get into transition. And as you know, as a former player, anytime you can see that ball go in the basket with a layup or an easy one, it surely helps with those jump shots. And, you know, we've done a much better job of attacking off the dribble and really driving closeouts and driving on seals within the lane. Guys have done a good job, you know, our ceiling in the lane, in which doesn't go down, you know, on the stat sheet. But when you see guys like Andrew Garcia, even P.J. Horn and Tamani, sometimes they don't get the basket. But they do a great job of sealing, in which once you beat your guy one-on-one, you're able to get to the rim. So I think we're getting more easier shots because we're helping each other, not just on assists, but with our actions, we're helping each other. And because of that, the ball is moving. Coach Crean really stresses the one more. We even have drills called one more, in which we're making the extra pass. And we're making that extra pass, our assist are up, and I think that's a big reason why we're shooting it better, you know, this part of the season.
And then the other thing that seems to be really making a huge difference lately is we have improved greatly on our rebounding. We won the glass against LSU, and we've been very competitive. Even in games where we've lost the glass, we've been extremely competitive and understanding that we're not a big team. Most every time we take the floor, we're facing bigger opponents. But yet we're competitive on that glass or winning the glass many nights.
Yeah, as a coach, it's fun to see that we're doing it, because we spend so much time on rebounding. From the day that I got here, it's not a day that go by that we don't spend time working on the rebounding. But what has really happened is that defensively we've done a much better job of containing guys and containing the dribble on pick and roll, forcing teams into jump shots, and then being able to attack the rim for defensive rebounds. And our guards are coming in, and they're doing a tremendous job, which, you know, with Sevier, you know, getting the triple-double, is because he was able to come in and get double-digit rebounds. So our guard rebounding has been really good. Doing a better job on the pick and roll, which stops teams from getting into our paint as much and forced them to take contested shots, which has helped us have a shell around the basket. And like you said, even though we're smaller, Coach Crean is always enforced and preach, let's all five guys rebound. And once again, as a coach on the staff, it's fun to see the growth in that area, because we truly, from day one, have spent so much time on rebounding. There's not a day go by that we don't do rebounding drills. And so it's good to watch the guys grow in that area.
No doubt about it. And Coach, before I let you go, South Carolina coming up Saturday at 1 o'clock at Stegman, and they took a whipping last night down in Starkville. And just knowing how Frank Martin and that squad, I mean, it seems like every time they get whipped badly, they respond in the next game. So I think we got our work cut out for us on Saturday.
Well, we do, but we took a whipping up there, so we're gonna hit first. I can tell you that now. So, hey, we took a whipping up there. Regardless of what they did their last game, we remember that. And, you know, they're coming in our place. And one thing we know with teams that do play aggressive is that we can't be counterpunchers, and we have to hit first. And so we'll be ready to hit first on Saturday.
Well, that's what I like to hear. Come out of those gates fast. That's what I like.
So, yes,
Coach Michael Curry here with us on the Bulldog Roundtable. Coach, thank you so much. Best of luck Saturday.
Okay, thanks so much.
All right, Coach Michael Curry from Coach Tom Crean's staff. He's in charge of player development with the University of Georgia basketball team. Appreciate his time this morning. Appreciate all of you in the Bulldog Nation for being with us here on Bulldog Roundtable. Don't forget that game, 1 o'clock Saturday at Stegman Coliseum. And let's have a great Bulldog Day, everybody.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.